What's up, guys? I'm Scott Tebow with the Small Town Roofer Podcast. Today we have Jonah joining us with our guest, Brad Akers with Brad Grows Businesses. Brad, how are you today?
Oh, I'm good. Happy to be here.
Jonah, how are you today?
I'm doing well.
Fantastic.
Jump into things.
There we go. All right, guys. So, Brad, I know just a little bit of your background. Why don't you kind of give our listeners a little bit of history of kind of your expertise in the roofing business or in the contracting space in general, kind of where you started to where you're at today?
Absolutely. Yeah. So in colleges and summers, I worked for a custom home builder, and that was just my entrance into the construction industry. Home building was down when I was looking for jobs after college. And so I was told, you know, what's pretty much never down? Roofing. Got into roofing distribution and started as manager in training, but knew I wanted to go the sales route the whole time. So got territory manager pretty quickly. Sold about $6 million a year there. Nothing crazy, but I was a baby-faced 24, 25-year-old, so wasn't so bad. And the way that I got business as the baby-faced 20, I mean, you've seen me. This is 31, so at 24, you can only imagine. The way that I got business, though, was I realized there's a lot of things that people don't know even when they start their roofing business, which sounds obvious, but there were things like some as simple as how do I do a takeoff from an eagle view? And I kind of know how to do it, but I don't really know how to train my office person how to do it. Or how do I get business? Is there door knocking's the only way to get jobs? I'm like, oh. So what I helped him with was when I wanted a business, when I wanted a client really bad, or when I wanted to keep a client really bad, but not necessarily be the cheapest price. That was my difference, is I'd help them generate leads sometimes on Facebook. I'd give them presentations on financing. I'd learn financing from, this was 8 years ago, I was already like, finance your insurance claims. So not that new of a concept, by the way. So that was my intro. And then as a territory manager, you drive around a lot. And you're in the car and there's a lot of windshield time. And I discovered podcasts. And podcasts made me want to go be a business owner a little faster than I originally planned. So part left SRS, came on as a 50% partner in my friend's roofing business. We grew that for about a year. But at the same time, I started what was meant to be a side hustle of just a little marketing company for roofing contractors. Thought, let me get it to 20, 30,000 a month or something. And that would be a pretty cool little like stream of income while sure. I'm doing this. That ended up like getting to 30,000 a month in like 45 days. I had to figure out about a year in, I was like, I still am learning how to run a business. This whole like doing two things, like doing this business over here is really difficult to manage. So I chose the thing I had 100% in, left my buddy's roofing company, still doing well. We grew it while we were together. And that was my intro into this side of things. Since little merged my agency with another, acquired another agency and bought an agency and merged it with my own. And then in April of last year, I sold it to do full-time more consulting around marketing and sales processes. Not the whole shebang necessarily, just my lane.
Yeah. So the business that you sold, how long did you have that before you let it go?
4 years.
4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. And just another bigger agency buy that out?
Yeah, so it's not as exciting of a story as you like. Selling a business is a cool thing to say you did. It's not right. Always as cool once all the dust settles.
Not as sexy as it sounds sometimes.
So that agency I acquired before was on a seller's note. And so a lot of the sale of my agency went to just paying that off. So it wasn't like some huge windfall of cash. And then the agency that bought it, I actually merged with a larger agency as like an owner operator of my portfolio, kind of like a Keller Williams almost or something like that of marketing agencies. And then I just sold it back to him.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, I mean, either way, it sounds like it was a successful venture, no matter which way you went with it. But
good experience. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, well, and we all got to get our feet wet. I was talking with someone yesterday. Actually, we did a podcast for, I think it was Riffer to Riffer. We were talking about this. And once you do this once and you get it to a certain point, like once you start a business, you know, say you grow a business to $5 million worth of revenue, it's not real hard to go start another business in a similar field. Not like you can't be a roofing business and then go start a veterinarian's office, you know, and expect to have the same success because it's totally different. But like, I feel like I could start a painting business and it took me a lot of years to get to this point I'm at now. I think I could get a painting business to $5 million in 2 years just because now I know what those steps are. Now, like I couldn't do that while I run my roofing business. I'm saying if I sold it, started fresh, now that you know those steps though, just like you built this marketing agency, you know the steps to take to get it to a certain level of success because you've already done it once. You've already taken the school of hard knocks. You've learned all the stuff that lost you money and kept you up at night and different things like that. And you know, a smart business owner is not going to do that twice. So, you know, definitely something to be said about just the experience points you get, you know, getting it to a point and then even if you let it go. But
yeah, as you're saying that, like it's, I think at some point, and part of the reason why I even did what I did, and like it was a jump forward when I sold it. So like I don't want to downplay it, but it just wasn't as like, I never am going to be like, I exited my marketing agency because that would be a little dramatic for what happened really. But the thing that I began learning, and this is where I was like, I could go start a different business. It's very similar that I think I'll like more, that I think is more impactful for the people I worked with. But the reason I was confident in that was because I started, is like, you know, in the Matrix, when you kind of see, like they start seeing the code, like that's how I would describe what you're describing. It's like after a while, like you understand the math, you understand the formula.
Well, you've got the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got the sauce, you got the recipe to get it to that point. Now, here's where it gets troublesome, is if you've done the $5 million, you can grow that next business to that point, but you're still going to hit that same wall because that next step you haven't learned yet, you know, and that's where we're at right now. We're trying to figure out how do we go from X and get to Y, because we know how to get to X. We can do that year in, year out, every year, no problem. I mean, obviously, a recession could affect that. But as long as things stay somewhat in the realm, we're going to continue to do that. But then that next step, that next big hurdle, it's like a wall. And you just keep running your head into it. But I guarantee you, as soon as we figure it out, I could do it again somewhere else. Much easier.
Can I interview you and ask you a couple questions for just 2 seconds?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
What types of things would you seek to figure that out?
So like right now, one of the things we're trying to figure out is we're in a unique situation because my market is this little teeny tiny corner in the state of Ohio in the middle of Appalachia where there's nothing. Like
the name.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, my county is 40,000-ish.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So
real small.
You're not joking.
No, real small. And then in that market, we do $4 million worth of revenue in that one county. So, I mean, that's county we're pretty dominant in. And then we have essentially two other areas that we sell. One is Charleston, West Virginia.
Okay.
Capital city of West Virginia. Fair-sized area. Income's not great. It's not an ideal market to chase, but there were circumstances that made that make sense.
Sure.
And so we did that and we're down there and we're actually really starting to find some success down there. And then there's another county that's another 40,000 population county in Ohio. Maybe that's
your niche, right?
Yeah. It's right. That's like we have a lot of success in these little areas because there's no competition.
I mean,
marketing's cheap. There's not much competition. Nobody's really advertising. Everything's word of mouth. So it is hard to get in, but once you get in, it just spreads like wildfire and you don't have to spend much money to do it. But
Scott, is that there's nobody from Columbus or these bigger markets that are targeting these areas because it's just too far of a drive to send a crew for a $10,000 roof.
Yeah. You have to stay about 2 hours out of the big cities. But what we know to be true is for us to truly hit the numbers that we want to hit, we have to get in one of these bigger cities, whether that's Columbus, Ohio, or like Morgantown, West Virginia, or Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Those are all about 2 hours from us. Yep. So any direction you go, it's about 2 hours.
There's a lot of roofers all in every area that you're talking about. Maybe not the 40,000 populations, but there's dense amounts of roofers in each of those markets that you just said out loud.
Well, and the problem, that's the catch. You're going to go there. So we want to test it. Columbus is probably going to be a test because that's where Jonah lives. So he understands the lay of the land there a little bit better. And he also understands kind of just the overall market. So we've got to, you know, I feel like that's a sign we need to go that way because I don't really have a real close relationship in those other two markets where I can bounce ideas off of, hey, what are you seeing in your neighborhoods or what are you seeing, you know, what are the other, what's the competition doing? Are they knocking your doors or what, are, you know, what's going on up there? So that's the direction we want to go. Your question, what am I doing to try to,
where would you look would be like, we all hit those points. Every business owner. And if you're a business owner and you don't think you've hit the point, then watch out because you're creeping up on it and you might not realize it. So like in those situations, maybe when you were at 1 million trying to get to 3 million, like where do you find that knowledge or that skill set to unlock?
It's trial and error. And I tell everybody, you know, in my local community, worth of network, I have a few guys that, you know, I've kind of guided on some stuff throughout the way. Friends, you know, just giving them an advice and things. And I didn't go to college. I've never paid for education to a institution. But I'll tell you right now, I have more than paid for my education.
Yeah, I believe business.
And the problem is, it's not a problem, but it's why I feel that we learn and we grow is because I have no problem taking a chance. We'll take 10 chances to try to get it right one time, but I'm going to pay for it 10 times, you know? So, but there's only two ways to grow. Either learn it from someone else, take the risk and trial and error. The problem is I don't have a ton of people in my market that are hitting the level I'm wanting to go to. I don't want to say my market, in my network. There's not a lot of people that are,
it's like
our next goal is 10 million house. And 15, you know,
being the most expensive house on the block doesn't have that many advantages. Sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. There's, and a lot of people, once they get to this 10 million or so kind of area, they're not real interested in conversating about it. They've found success. Like, and they're not real interested in sharing it. Now, there's a few guys, like I've listened to that Martin Pettigrew. I think he's fantastic. I love listening to him. And obviously, he's freaking killing it. So there are a few guys, but it's not like he's going to talk to me one-on-one, give me the secret formula.
I bet if you paid him enough, he would. But
I'm sure as long as I paid him enough. But man, after hearing some of the private equity stuff he's got going on right now, I don't know if there is enough, you know. So he's killing it, so. Anyway, yeah, that's our whole thing is trial and error. But leading up to, I do want to take a step back because I've had two business coaches that have definitely helped me cross some of those hurdles. Mm-hmm. You know, that 2 to 4 was a real 2 to 5, 2.5 to right in there was a real tough time. And honestly, Dave Sullivan with the Roofer Coach, I hired him 2 years ago probably. And they've helped me a lot, really, really just tighten that niche up and get really, really intentional about who you're selling to and what you're selling. And honestly, we services left and right and our revenue just kept going up, you know, profits kept going up. So we just, yeah, I've had a lot of help along the way too, but we'll take some chances to try to find success.
And the thing that I wasn't meaning to try to be like coaches, right? Because at the end of the day, there's a lot of ways. I think one of the biggest cautionary things that I would have is like, one, be careful if you're talking with people where it's hard to find any alignment. They're just talking about it because they're just giving you a suggestion in a Facebook comment just because they're a good guy. Like that type of thing, you got to be careful because a lot of the time there's so much information someone would need in order to give you good advice. And the universally good advice is usually pretty accessible out and about. So what happens, especially, I mean, you mentioned the range where you sought help, but what happens in that range is I think people are like, okay, I'm growing. What am I supposed to do? And they're like, okay, I need to build a big website. I need to get the SEO. I need to get marketing. You know, the person who's doing 3 million has 15 salespeople down the road. So I need to go hire a million salespeople. Like all these right. things that people, and none of them are wrong, by the way, like specifically, but they might be for you. And I think it's really scary, frankly, like how advice flows around and floats around right now, because I think people have such a distorted view of like what it takes. And even the people who have made it, you said at that 10 million range, like they're not actually telling you their stories. So if you say like, who should I hire for marketing? And then someone's like, this guy. Okay. Is that how you grew though? That guy probably has helped you. And it's just to land the plane. I think it's a matter of like discernment and really understanding, like you got to bet on yourself first. You have to bet on your trial and error and your lessons first. Once you've done that, you're going to have enough information to interview someone and decide whether you think that it might make sense for your situation. But a lot of people just jump into things and make decisions based off of just like what the masses are doing. It's like, do you want to be like the masses? Because the masses, truly, like I promise you, half those people online are really not doing as well as you think. The people that are the loudest in the industry. It's someone, not a huge number, but like the amount of people who are like, yeah, I'm doing 2 million or this or that. And then like, I know that they're hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt to their supplier. It's like, is that a good business then?
Right. Well, and I'll tell you another piece to that too is to be, I think a wise person, and I don't want to call myself wise, but I try to be wise. You know, I try to be a wise person. Yeah. So a wise person is going to take advice from everyone. And then you soak that in, you listen to it, right? For instance, my brother-in-law is a financial advisor. He knows nothing about the contracting business. I don't want to say he knows nothing, but he knows very little. You know, that he's a financial advisor, very good at what he does, but not, he's not a roofing contractor. He doesn't know a roofing business. He doesn't, you know, have that background, but he'll throw advice my way from time to time, right? I used to blow it off. I used to just like let it go in one ear and out the other for a certain amount of time. I did just because it's like, dude, this doesn't apply. Like, this is not the same. Like, what you're saying applies to you, but it doesn't apply to me. What I found myself doing as I grew and matured in business was I was taking that advice and I would put a twist on it. I'd say, okay, that works for him because of this. So you've got 100% of this advice. There's only 10% that really applies to me. Well, let me pull that 10% out and then kind of see how I can apply that in my business and give it a trial run, see what happens with that advice. And what we found, you know, you can take advice from anybody. You just have to make it fit your model and try it out and see what happens. But not to say sit around, just listen to what everybody's got to say and change your entire business model. Just saying, if a person is a smart person and they're willing to chat with you, it's probably worth listening to and taking a couple notes. And then when you got some downtime, reflect back on those notes and see if you can make sense or heads or tails of what you took in.
And there's an order of it. Like what you just described is perfect, because that's, I think, another example for my wording earlier of like seeing the code in the matrix all of a sudden. It's like, okay, there are universal, there's overlap within business where this person's advice, if I can just unravel the fact that he doesn't know anything about a contracting business, he probably still said a truth about business in general that you could take. But it takes things have to happen in order, and like you have to get your knees scraped up. You have to, like, not to say that you have to like screw up too bad, but you have to at least have a series of micro failures, the air part of trial, in order to know what's good advice, what's not, in order to know what, because the person that takes advice and follows it from everyone is in trouble. The person who strategically takes advice and then one thing really makes sense and then they go all in on that person generally is going to have more success if they know how to choose that one thing, right? If they don't.
Well, and let's just be honest, as contractors, we all, I don't want to say we all, but the majority of us are a little bit hard-headed anyway, right? You're not going to tell us what we know. You know, you got to go figure it out for yourself. And those failures are what shape your decisions. Because I can tell you right now, Brad, if you told me, Scotty, this is what you're doing wrong, or this is what you're about to do wrong. Let's phrase it that way. This is what you're about to do wrong. I'm going to try it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm still going to do it. And I have to prove that, shit, that is a terrible idea. You know what I mean? I just lost freaking 30 grand off that idea, you know, and now I'll believe you. So unfortunately, that's for me, that's why trial and error has always been kind of the key, is because I'm just too damn stubborn to listen entirely to somebody. But at the same time, it's shaped me and shaped the business. And, you know, we always move forward with 100% certainty because we will try it. We are going to try what we think is potentially right. So
I'd imagine your hard-headedness and maybe like we clearly haven't had too many failures with the capital F yet, but those failures with the lowercase f, those probably are what allowed you to propel yourself to where you are today, even if they stung. And that's the thing that people fail forward. Like, we can use all the cliches, but they are true. I think even me with my agency, when I had my market, we did well, like pretty well. Like, I've been around the agency space for a while. I did well in the roofing industry. There was something novel about an ex-distribution guy having an agency, and we grew a lot, had a lot of clients, and I found myself giving the same advice to people. And kind of like what you were saying is like, if you tell me this is what I'm about to do wrong, I'm going to try it anyways. Well, I was the person without putting enough thought into it a few times telling like, well, this is what you need. You need SEO. That's like, you have to get caught. You have to get ranked on Google. And while SEO is going, like, do you have a lead problem? Yes. Okay. Well, then this is, but I was so focused on my set, my suite of solutions that I could provide, even though I knew other solutions, but I just didn't even think I could talk about them because I was like, no, they're hiring me from online marketing. But I would prescribe them these. And then after a while, I started doing the math and realizing, oh crap, if I want to, like, once you do the math of like cost per acquisition and like really look at how long things take sometimes, really look at what budgets are necessary, it's really difficult to ethically tell people you need to bet on me. And what I've realized is it's hard to trust someone who's saying, hey, bet on me. Instead, I hope that right now what we're doing is like, Scott, I want you to bet on yourself. And I'm going to work with you on a few things that I think are going to help you continue the momentum that you have. But I just need to make sure you understand how they would fit in first. Because if you don't, then it's not going to work. If you do, then we're still you betting on you. Because I don't want you to feel like you have to wait on me for some curtain that I pull back after you pay me or something. And that's something that is such a huge lesson I think people can learn, is like, be cautious of people that want you to blindly trust them, because why do you need to be blind about it? You know, like, why do you, why are they using this, like these random sets of like, no, don't do this, don't do this. Why are they so stuck on their suite of answers? Because if someone talks to me, I don't usually work with too many people. I do work with some, but if someone's like at 8 million or 10 million, like generally they've, even if it's on accident, implemented a lot of the things I'll tell the 1 to 4 million person to implement. And at that point, it's a matter of fine tuning it. But I don't really take many of those meetings because usually I'm just like, hey, you got it. Like, get it more organized. You don't need to hire me to tell you that. Like,
so with that said, that's a good intro into, you know, and don't want to misspeak. Is it BGB Enterprises? Is that the
name? So Brad Grows Businesses was just a brand that kind of to separate myself from the bigger company that I merged with that I mentioned, just like, so I had my own thing. And then when it was time to start a new LLC, I was like, oh, well, let's just go with BGB Enterprises. But then I brought on a partner, even though I had all this branding. So now I'm just like, let's try to not make it the Brad Show quite as much. But I'm not sure that I'm doing a good enough job. I probably need to take this freaking sign. Okay. It's kind of cool, though.
I like it. It's great backdrop. That's like, I got the beer signs behind me. So a little different backdrop. But no, so with BGB Enterprises, so, you know, why don't you give us, I'd like to do two things in this podcast. I'd like to basically understand, you know, really what BGB is doing to help contractors, you know, the few hot button topics, you know, what are these couple things that are really helping contractors? And then I also something, cause I've listened to a few podcasts that you've been on with other people, and something I haven't heard that I want to hear is, what is the customer journey? So like, if I'm at a $2 million roofing business and I just I'm hitting the wall and my marketing's not working and I'm spending boatloads on Facebook and it's not doing me any good and I need help. And I think Brad's the way to go. What is that journey? So let's start with, I think let's start with the journey.
Okay.
And then we can dive into those couple, you know, deeper dive topics maybe along the way.
No, that's a cool question and not one. I mean, I obviously in like a sales call, I would talk about it, but we'll try to more mass market way of describing it. What you just described, I mean, when someone comes to me, there's really two places that they might be, maybe three, but two are, the third one usually is just like, yeah, this is interesting. And then doesn't take my phone call a week later. So they don't usually sign up. The two that do sign up and that get the value are someone who has tried a lot of marketing or has thought about trying a lot of marketing. And I'm going to lump those into the same because some people just have heard enough cautionary tales to where they've tortured themselves the equivalent amount of trying to decide what's what without even testing versus the person who has just spent tons of money on it. You'd be surprised where it's like, marketing, oh my gosh, like how can I trust these people? I'm like, how many people have you worked with? They're like, well, no, I haven't. I was like, I'm not mad that you've already like figured this one out, but also like, I don't know where you're getting your information. Those would be one of them. And then the other one is the person who's like in it. So this is the person who usually has a sales team that's slightly out of control. Someone that is realizing that they're just in kind of disarray from a like lead in money out or money in money out perspective and are trying to figure out like what's going on. Either way, the first step is to really like help them see like what are you optimizing for? Not SEO optimization, not like optimizing a Google ad account. No, as a business, what outcomes, not outcomes as far as like sales, but like what types of opportunities are you really optimizing for? And I'll ask you, like, if your ideal call in, what does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, we're 100% retail. So ideally we want somebody calling saying that their roof is 30 years old, you know, 25, 30 years old. It's got a couple small leaks. It's in a nicer neighborhood. Maybe not the high, don't get me wrong. We love the Whales. They're closing one out today. It's almost a $40,000 re-roof. And for us, that's a big one. You know, we love them, but you know, our average ticket's 15 grand. So the $15,000 to $20,000 range. So, you know, 3,000 square foot home, 2,800 square foot steep home, you know, that's our sweet spot. We want it to be ideally not out in the country. I mean, we do a bunch of it in the country because of where we live, but there's very little ability to market neighborhoods when you're doing a house on 60 acres, you know? So yeah, that our ideal is, you know, inside of kind of the suburb communities, 2,500 to 3,000 square foot with an outdated roof.
Okay. Can you think of what I would say you're missing? Cause we're talking about, what are you optimizing? Those are great characteristics, but what might you be missing?
Age of homeowner.
Okay, I got you. Well, we won't spend too much time on that. But what you're missing is how, like, what made them reach out to you. So in my mind, someone that just wants a service and then you were the first one they saw, or, and even if your brand has done a good amount of the work, if they don't actually have a relationship with your brand, your brand just made it more convenient to reach. Like, there's a scenario, and almost every online marketing source is fully focused on generating leads of people who want a service, but not doing a whole lot of heavy lifting on people who specifically want you to do the service. Joseph Hughes talks about this really well, about how you need to do brand lead generating or branding ads and videos and tell a story all over your market for an extended period of time before you try to do lead gen. Now, I think that's a longer route. I agree with what he's saying, though. I think there's lower hanging fruit to focus on, but people get really focused on just generating that lead that barely knows anything about their company and has not really witnessed their company do a whole lot. So my first thing that I want to challenge people who come to me on each situation, because this helps them see, oh, that's why marketing has just felt so icky to me or hasn't worked for me. And this person is like, oh, that's why I'm running around like crazy, because I'm generating a bunch of leads from people who don't actually know who I am. And even if they know who you are, like they saw you on Google, I've looked at the analytics of websites. Most people were on your website for about 30 seconds before they actually called you. So all that work that you did to make your website pretty, it's getting about 30 seconds worth of attention. I mean, now, sometimes there's like the people are 3 minutes, 4 minutes, but like if you actually watch one individual click to call, it usually is pretty fast. The people who stay on your website for longer, a lot of the time, aren't even calling right away. And what happens is people are overwhelming their business with leads in some cases, where you have to do a lot of the legwork at the appointment to get them to realize why you are the person they should go with. They may have already called other people to compare you with. Now, in a small town, I'd imagine that's why you're doing as well as you are, because they're probably doing that less and your brand probably has done more of the work. And there's more situations where even if they find you on Google, because there's limited options for them, they're like, oh, yeah, I think that's the guy that did Susie Ann's roof over there. Mm-hmm. And sorry, that's me being small townist. So, but as we're doing that, like, we need to find, first step is, what are we optimizing for? We need to be optimizing for energy giving opportunities. And I know that sounds like kind of frou-frou, but like if you're running leads and you're having to convince them why you even are relevant, there, why is your price what it is and someone else is $2,000 lower? Why, like, you're having to just sell them based off of like the features you provide? It's tough because you're so commoditized, and it's really hard to snap yourself out of being that commodity, no matter how good you are in front of them. They still might use you, but it's just a different relationship. So step one, get really clear on the fact that what you most want is quality conversations. Quality conversation is someone that wants your service and specifically is interested in your company to do it. The second question is, where do you get those? Because Google ads and Facebook ads and SEO are not very linear paths to that. It's not a hard line where that won't happen, but those are not very good paths to that. Those are mostly cold leads. What we want to do is think, where can we consistently, not just randomly, but consistently find leads that match that? They need your service or are aware that they need your service, and they specifically want to talk to you about it. Not you and five other people, but you. The place to do that, in my opinion, the lowest hanging fruit is the neighbors that you've been able to demonstrate your service to. You can be that one guy that's doing a roof down the street rather than that one of five guys that they saw on Google. And then referrals, because people like people they know, like, and trust. If Scott knows, likes, and trusts me and hired me and I did a great job for him, and Jonah knows, likes, and trusts Scott, then the transitive property kind of is at work there, and Jonah's more likely to know, like, and trust me. Now, there's still some work to be done, but we're at a much higher starting point.
Yeah.
So that's the big first thing. And I know I'm kind of going extending.
No, you're good.
I just want to, like, make sure this clicks for people, because this is the problem. I mean, I could say this is the problem about cost per acquisition. I could say this is the problem about that. But from a just broad perspective, before we get all in the nitty gritty, the problem is everyone's optimizing for cold leads and not realizing that that is creating a massive drag on the energy of the salespeople, on their confidence, on the owner's energy. It's tough if you're doing that much work at each appointment. So we want to optimize for those opportunities. So step two is how. Like, how do we do it? You and I know the basics. Everyone knows the basics. Okay, well, I can knock around the area. I should put my yard signs up. I should make sure that I'm at the job site at least for a little bit. Those are just like the very broad ones that most people would list out for the neighborhood marketing stuff. Referrals, everyone's kind of feels like, I mean, I'm doing as good as I can here. Telling them I have a referral program. I don't know. I mean, then they might think, okay, I need to get other contractors for referrals, and which are all like, yes, great. But that's not the only way. There's more juice to squeeze. So what happens on the neighborhood marketing side, though, is people are lackadaisically doing the basics if they're doing anything at all. And they're doing it inconsistently. So it's not an ingrained part of their process to do the different revenue generating activities during the sales and production process that would allow you to get in front of the neighbors the most. And then if they are doing them, they're still doing them as if they're lead generating. And that's not actually the type of interaction that people want in that case. So if you're like knocking their door and still kind of just coming across as a door knocker, even if you can point that, then you're not really, you have an advantage, but not the maximum advantage. So what we first want to do is help them organize a process for their neighborhood marketing. We have what we call the four growth engines, and we install these strategies through the sales and production process. One of them's direct mail around appointments and builds. Now, you're not going to get a ton of calls from the direct mail. Like, one of my most common things that clients say that are still figuring it out are, you know, I don't know, not many people have like referenced the direct mail as they've called me, but what you need to do from an attribution perspective is how many of the roofs that you've done recently got a piece of mail. Like, that's really what the attribution you need to look at is, because we're trying to create maximum touch points. Two is the canvassing strategy, but we do need to be specific about how we do it. How are we creating opportunities to where we can introduce ourselves, get to know them without really making it seem like we're just trying to get their business and there's nothing else to it? So it's about kind of the scripting when you're at the door, but also the approach you're taking. We have some simple steps we take to make sure that they've at least had something of yours in their hand before you talk to them, especially at the appointment. At the build, you kind of have a little more leeway because it's hard to not look out your window and see a roof being replaced. And they've had opportunities to drive past your yard sign and things like that. So that would be the second one, the canvassing. Canvassing around appointments, canvassing around builds. We want to make sure that we're doing that very intentionally, but also every time. The third is, how are you communicating? So how are you communicating with the homeowner that you're doing the roof for? are you using that homeowner not to get you referrals, because we don't want to pay them yet for referrals when you're already doing all this other work to get in front of the neighbors? How are you communicating with them and getting them to maybe do activities that would help you get in front of the neighbors? So an example of that is, like, can you get the homeowner to give your neighbor, their neighbors, your number in case like one of your trucks are in the way during the build? That's different than, hey, I want to sell your neighbors, because you haven't even done the work for them. So asking them for referrals is the only reason they're going to give you referrals. Usually at that point would be hoping that they're going to get some discount or something.
Sure.
Not the only reason, but oftentimes. So we want to, if we're going to leverage that, and we should, we need to try to do it in a very specific way. And then on social media, a lot of people wonder what to post, where to post. Most of the time, people are not interested in the random blog post that you post, or the 12 ways to prepare your roof for fall, or any of the crap that you see. And they also, like, while showing your personality with like funny memes and GIFs and stuff, or like that can work and create engagement. Most of the time when people go to your social media, they want to just see that you do what you sell. So can you turn social media into a demonstration vehicle? And if you do, how can you make that, how can you ensure that the right people are seeing the most relevant stuff? And that's, some people, some marketers will kill me for this or just disagree with me vehemently. But I've seen more people get more leads from boosting a post a mile around a job site than they get in a month from someone managing their Facebook ads. Like,
so I'm going to jump in here because I don't want to steal credit. Jonah, this must have been where I heard it. Because we started trying to do this exact thing. Because I remember, so I did a video for Proliner, I don't know, a month or so ago, about if you're, you know, trying to get to your first million or whatever, what's an easy marketing strategy to grow business? And I said boosting Facebook posts, because it takes basically no knowledge. You don't need to know how to do any kind of Facebook ads. Facebook ads are messy. They're really difficult to do and to do right.
They require a lot of Excel sheets and fun things to, if you really want to understand what's happening.
Right, exactly. And so I said boost Facebook posts. Well, then I started looking into some stuff, and I'm like, literally, we had more success. And I don't want to say like direct success, but we had a lot of people that would follow our page from boosted posts, because it looks more organic than the ads, in my opinion.
No, I mean, you're 1000% right.
So we always had more success.
It's not as much of an interruption. What's your neighborhood? Do you care at telling me what your neighborhood is called?
Marietta.
Okay, Marietta.
Yeah.
So, and let's say there's a main street in Marietta. So we won't go too detailed into all the street names. But so there's a main street in Marietta. Everyone in the neighborhood Marietta knows Main Street. If you saw a post that said, we just finished Mrs. Jones's roof on Main Street in Marietta, so grateful for the opportunity, check out this transformation that we accomplished with, are you Owens Corning? Is that what I remember? Okay, GAM.
Yeah.
With HD, screw Owens Corning. With HD, with like, we took their old roof, their old three-tab roof, we upgraded them to an HD weathered wood roof and with upgraded Z-Ridge. I don't know, Z-Ridge around. Sure. Either way, point is, like, and then you're like, go ahead and give us a call. Like, if we can ever check you out, like, we're so grateful for the opportunity to work in this community. That is much less of an interruption than these random ads that you see all over the place. And I just made a post, like, the most common ad that I see is like $6,000 for a new roof. And you want to like create relevance. Like, you, that skips steps. Instead of just having to get people to become enamored with your roofing brand, which, like, before you were in roofing, like, did you care about roofing? Like, did you think about it? Did you notice it? I couldn't have named a single roofing company.
I still can't believe that there's enough roofing work for my business to be the size it is. I can't even believe, and mind you, I'd still have 20 competitors, you know what I mean, that roof. They might not roof as much as we do, but they still roof on a regular basis.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there was that many that got done. Like, I didn't know that, and I've been in construction my whole life.
Yeah, it's wild. And that's the thing is, it's so irrelevant. Like, it's really not a relevant industry to almost anyone. When it comes up, it's an interruption for the most part, but also you can get them to be interested in your brand and to understand and know it. But one of the best ways you can do it is, oh, my neighbor got a new roof. I probably could use a new roof too. I see this person's working in Marietta. Okay. Let me reach out to them. Let me at least be more aware of them. You're checking off a box that creates a lot more familiarity with you than if you're just advertising to the masses. And an example I like to give that I think is really relevant. I think it's one of my favorite examples. I don't know that it hits as well for everyone else, but tell me how it lands with you. You know, private equity is coming in like crazy, right? There's a roofing company I know. I'm not going to say where or the name because this is kind of private information. They spent $700,000. They had $21 million. They had spent $700,000 on marketing in 2023. Got bought by a private equity company in November, December kind of range. What do you think their marketing budget is in 2024?
I have no idea.
I need you to guess. Just because it's wild. So yeah, you would think that would be a huge marketing budget. $700,000 to a $3 million marketing budget.
Wow.
Guess what else they're doing? Decreasing their price.
Really?
At the wish of the private equity company. So they're going to flood the market. They're going to own every lead gen. They're going to brand their asses off. And they're going to be, and they were a more premiumly priced company. So I think that's part of why. But now they're going to go smack dab in the middle, pricing wise. No one stands a chance.
They're just going to go absolutely dominate the markets they're in, try to shove everybody out.
Yeah. So this is their 4-year plan. It's not just 2024. So the point that I'm making is they're going to be able to spend a ton of money on branding. And I know this company well. They do a lot of smart things. So they're going to make this work really well. But if someone is out there and can spend $1 million on branding, and I think it's safe to assume that about $1 million of that $3 million budget will be more branding focused.
Sure.
TV commercials, radio thing. I don't know. Radio probably is not as relevant now, but all those things, if you look at the markets that they're serving, say there's 1 million people that they're advertising to total, because they're in a couple different markets. That's $1 per person from a branding budget. Do you think that you can spend more than $1 per person if you're super targeted?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, a lot more.
$3, $5 per person if you're doing it in 20 to 30 person swaths, or even if you're just doing it in a tiny neighborhood. So that's crazy to think about the opportunity that affords you, because you can spend, branding creates the best leads, but it also costs the most money generally. There's a study where the more an ad copy, and this was on direct response ad copy, in magazines and newspapers, this is an old study, but the right formula is 90% offer and 10% brand for the lowest cost to acquire a customer in direct response marketing. But the problem is there's only a small percentage of the market that's actually ready to buy. Branding is the answer to that, where we can nurture them and all that. But now we can hit them a lot harder with branding types of marketing in this tiny little area and spend more per person, and spend equals impressions and touch points and the value of the hit than some of the huge companies that can't get that targeted. And that's something that I think is such an amazing opportunity that a roofing company has, is if you can get really organized with how you're promoting, you can create those types of leads and those types of opportunities, those brand generated leads, those people, a brand generated lead, they need your service and they want you specifically to do it.
I want to add one thing on that Facebook boost. And Jonah, maybe take a note on this, because we're going to do this, because this is a pretty good idea. So when you're doing these 1 mile radius boosted posts, I think you go a step further, and whoever's doing it, we can have Jennifer do this. So once we complete a job, she needs to follow up with that customer and ask that customer if they'll follow our Facebook page, and then ask them if she can tag them in the post.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, when you make that post, the post can literally say, thanks, customer, in a tagged version for letting us do your roof on 4th Street and Marietta, blah, blah, whatever. But then you can even get real personal about it. And then that person, you know, is probably going to like it or share it, because now they're tagged in it, right? And now their friends and neighbors, probably, that they're friends with on Facebook, are going to see it directly. And now that turns in to a referral.
So
because now they're literally referring you right on Facebook to all their friends.
You're a smart man, Scott. So I'm going to give you a little secret here. Not a secret. I have said it publicly too many times for it to be a secret. But so that's exactly the type, like that is how you grab the referral process and create it to be slightly more predictable. Now, is it going to be some equal, like linear, like I do this and I get this, not in a silo, not like individually, but over time, you're going to be able to like increase the average numbers of referrals per client. What we do is both. So we'd still do that social media post. We probably wouldn't tag them because we don't want to waste an opportunity. What we do is we say, I'm going to run you through a quick process. Scott, would you be interested? Like in theory, like if you had someone that needed a new roof, like based off of the experience you had with us, like would you be willing to refer us to them? You say, yeah, I think that. And then say, okay, awesome. So it might make sense for me to give you some details about a referral program. Then I'd love to have you as a part of it. We actually pay $20 for a qualified appointment, $200 per closed deal, or whatever your referral program is. Mind if I go, like, is that something you'd be interested in? Yeah. Free money, right? So Scott, the way that you become a referral partner, all we need you to do is post about us on social media. So go ahead and pull out your phone, because I just want to make sure that you have the right company, because a lot of the time, like it's going to pull up every roofing company in the country when you try to tag us. Want to make sure you find the right one. And then let's take a picture of your roof. And if you're up for it, you in the picture, and let's post it and just tell people about your experience. And obviously, like, I have a much more organized, smooth way of presenting that, but you get them to do a revenue, like a referral producing activity, in order to enter into your referral program and qualify to receive those rewards. Now you have them posting personally instead of you posting for them, them tagging your business page, and it gets more reach. It gets the reach on their entire page, not just like a few little people. Like that's a little algorithm thing. And then you now have two, right? So you still have your before and after that you posted, where you mentioned their name, you mentioned their street name, you boosted it. Now you have this where they tagged you in something. Now the business page can share that post. The salesperson can share that post. Scott can share that post. And now the referrals that come in from that can be theirs, and you can actually get them paid for the referral program. And that's an example of like a way to really like leverage that. If they give you a review, you absolutely should have a nice little template that you post the review in on Facebook. Go ahead and boost it too. Like those are things that you can do, but you want to just make sure the most relevant people are seeing it. And we're not saying that, like, a lot of time people are looking for like direct, okay, I'm going to get a lead the moment I post this. It's like they want one plus one equals two. And sometimes it just is less linear than that. It would be nice if it always worked like that. But sometimes you do get the follows rather than the people commenting. Sometimes people just save your information and call you later. But like it, that's the type of thing that absolutely increases those brand generated leads, because people like that type of thing. And you can kind of take control of the referral process and make them do a referral generating activity for you in order to be a referral partner while they're ready. But you have to structure the conversation so that they actually do it. Otherwise, if they're just like, yeah, I'll do it later, then they probably
won't. I've only got a couple more minutes, Brad. I do have one thing I want to touch on before we end this. So
please.
Customer acquisition cost. And I think it's our mutual friend, John. We talk about this together some. Jonah and I have been really trying to look into this because we spend a significant amount of money advertising. Yeah. We have a pretty significant budget for all the more revenue we do. So, you know, there, once you, a cost of a lead, a cost of an appointment, you know, that's what's always talked about. That's always what cost per click, cost per lead, cost per appointment, you know, cost per, but the actual acquisition cost isn't, I feel like, not talked about that often. Why don't you give us just a, I got like 2 or 3 minutes here.
Okay, I'll do.
Give us 2 or 3 minutes of how you figure that out. Because at the end of the day, if we're spending $3,000 to acquire a customer, we're not making money.
Yeah. So big, big thing to think about. One, as you're looking at it, there's metrics that matter so much, or there's like things to track that people don't track enough sometimes. So one of them is cost per lead, but people need to track lead to appointment ratio. That's an important one and can drastically change your, like, your costs. Cost per lead on Facebook might be $30, but lead to appointment ratio might be 15%. Like if you're just doing a lead gen ad. So that would end up being a $180, somewhere around there, cost per actual appointment. Google ads, probably 100 in your market, probably lower. But if you're talking about the whole, like in the bigger markets, about $150 cost per conversion, website form fill, call over a minute, however it's tracked. And then probably still though, probably about a 60% lead to appointment ratio. So that's a really important number. Another important number that you need to look at is like your management fee needs to be included. So don't just lump that into overall fixed overhead. If you have a management fee, then that's an important number. So a lot of people, like, they have the $2,500 management fee or whatever it is, sometimes more. You have to have an ad spend that disperses the management fee enough to where your cost per appointment isn't crazy. Because the same numbers I just gave you for Google, $150 cost per conversion, 60% leads to appointment, so $250 in ad spend cost per appointment. The average marketing budget for just like $1 million company that's trying to go make it is going to be like $3,000 a month, $100 a day. With a $2,500 management fee, that would end up being like a $458 cost per appointment. And that's a little rough. Closing rate, incredibly important. So if you're figuring out your closing rate, like, if you're running ads to keep your salespeople busy and they're not used to cold leads, they're closing, I mean, generally, they really are closing probably below 20% if you really look. They're not going to tell you. They're going to be like, probably about 40%. But then when you really dive in, it's going to be less. Not always, but often. And then commission, like, in this case, on from a marketing dollars perspective, like, it's important to count commission into your cost per acquisition. So cost per acquisition usually is going to be, unless you're spending a lot, which actually will usually make it go down. So a big budget is actually an advantage for multiple reasons. It's going to be like $1,500 to $2,000, depending on like the skills of the marketer, the market, closing rate. Then there's going to be commission. Probably like on an average roof is in the $1,000 range for a salesperson. So that's $2,500 to $3,000 cost to acquire a customer. And then you have to look like that's not just an individual campaign. You're spending that every month and it takes a while to collect it. So to try to like just land the plane here, it's really just a matter of like understanding at the very least, you have to have other vehicles to lower your company cost per acquisition. I don't have the opinion that you shouldn't run Google ads or Facebook ads, or if you don't have a big budget, that's not the place to go. But if you have a big budget, that's fine, but you need to have other things within your company, referrals, neighborhood marketing strategies to lower the overall cost per acquisition. Because if you got on average of one job as a result of every job, then your cost per acquisition just got cut in half. Like that's good. And the nice thing though, is it's not one job as a result of every job. That next job, you might get another job as a result of that too.
Right.
So over a long enough time horizon, you are actually like really lowering your cost per acquisition. And it usually can get as low before it just stops. It can get as low as usually about $250 to $300. And that's crazy, like low, but you just have to be consistent for that to happen. Otherwise it won't.
Well, and just to wrap up, at the end of the day, it's just like real estate. The money's made in the sale. Everybody wants to flip houses, do all these things. To flip a house, it's not about what you're going to spend on the house and what you can sell it for. It's about what you pay for the house. Your money is made all in the sale. Everybody can do the remodel for the same price. It's going to get listed for the same price with the remodel done. It's about how little can I spend to acquire the house. Acquiring a customer is exactly the same. How little can I spend to acquire that customer? Because we're all selling that roof at that same price point. We're all have the same cost in putting that roof on. The money's made in the sale. So
you have to look at it as a whole though. Like if you just look at it that, you're almost never going to be happy with like your Google Ads cost per acquisition. So I agree with what you're saying, but I also would
I'm saying that over the course of time.
Over a long period of time, like you have to have other things.
Sure.
If you're going to run Google Ads and Facebook Ads and SEO, your responsibility as a business owner to your bottom line is to have really strong referral strategy and really strong neighborhood marketing strategy, because otherwise you're going to be left wondering, why am I doing more jobs but have less money? And that's not a fun place to be.
Cool. Brad, well, I got to wrap it up here. I appreciate the time. We learned a lot. I think this is going to be valuable to anybody listening. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're all going to keep growing and keep learning from each other. But do you want to share real quick where anybody could find you if they want to have a chat with you?
Sure. So best place to find me is just follow me on Facebook. That's where I'm the most active. I post a lot. I also have a community that is slower ticket community. It's the price is going to increase soon, but that's about $97 a month right now, probably for the next couple weeks. And then we'll end up at about 297, but we go really hard in that. A lot of good conversations, a lot of good trainings and courses that we have. And that is called the Built Right Contractor. And I'll send a link if anyone finds me on Facebook and wants to join it, but the link's too complicated to give right now.
Awesome. Sounds good, man. Well, you have a good rest of your day. Thanks for listening, everyone.
I really appreciate it, Scott. Thank you for having me.
Yep.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Yeah.